कुर्वन् गीतामृतं ददौ लोकत्रयोपकाराय तस्मै कृष्णात्मने नमः। हरे कृष्ण। वेलकम बैक टू अ भगवद गीता भक्ति शास्त्री कोर्स। वी आर नाउ इनटू द फिफ्थ चैप्टर। वी डिस्कस द फर्स्ट सेवन वर्सेस ऑफ द फिफ्थ चैप्टर। दिस फिफ्थ चैप्टर, लेट्स हैव अ क्विक ओवरव्यू वंस अगेन बिफोर वी मूव फॉरवर्ड एंड लुक एट द सेक्शंस। So the first section was Karma Yoga is equal to but easier than Gyan Yoga. Then we are now discussing how Karma Yoga keeps a person free from bondage. That's second section, 7 to 16. By fixing the mind on Atma, Karma Yogi stays free from bondage. So seventh verse we discussed was Kurvan Apinal Sarvabhutatma Bhutatma Kurvan Apinalipyate. Let's go to the 8th and 9th verse now. These are two are clubbed together, Vaishnava Prabhupada. Naiva Kinchit Karomiti युक्तो मन्येत तत्त्ववित् पश्यन् श्रुण्वन् स्पृशन् जिघ्रन् अश्नन् गच्छन् स्वपन् स्वशन् प्रलपन् विसृजन् गृह्णन् उन्मिशन् निमिशन्नपि इन्द्रियाणिन्द्रियार्थेषु वर्तन्त इति धारयन्। सो नैव किञ्चित् करोमि इति, न एव, सर्टन्ली नाट्, किञ्चित् इवन् अ लिटिल्, करोमि इति ऐ एम् डूयिङ्ग्, करोमि इस् ऐ एम् डूयिङ्ग्, I do iti. One doesn't think like this. So, one the yukto manyete tattvavit. Tattvavit is the person who is the knower of the truth. Such a person manyete. Such a person thinks what? The person who is well engaged doesn't think thinks that I am not the doer of anything. And what are the things which are is talking about? Pashyan, shrunvan, sprishan, jigran. So these are actions of the various senses. So first there are the senses which take things inward, the knowledge acquiring sense. Pashyan is seeing, Shrunvan is hearing, Sprushan is touching, Jigran is smelling, Ashnan is eating. So these are the ways in which we take things inside the body. And then Gachan is going here and there. Gachan Swapan, Swashan. Swapan is sleeping, dreaming. Shwasan is the breathing. Then pralapan. Pralapan is talking. Visrujan is giving up. Grihanan is accepting. So these are the various ways in which we can take things inside the body and send things outside the body. Unmishan, nimishan napi. Unmishan is closing the eyes, opening the eyes. Indriyan, indriyartheshu, varpanta iti dharayan. So, dharayan, what does one understand? The person who is the knower understands that simply the senses are coming in contact with the sense objects. Nothing more is happening. So, actually, what is Krishna telling over here? That the wise person understands that when so many things happen with the body, I am not actually the doer of those things. Now, we think I am the body. For example, I think I am speaking right now. And I am using this body for doing various things. Now, at one level, it is true, I am speaking. But that is hardly the complete picture. Modern science, we will understand it at different levels. We'll first understand it at a scientific level, then we'll understand it at a philosophical level. So if you look at scientific level, in the body, there are different kinds of activities that happen. So there are some activities which you do consciously. For example, now I want to explain something with an expression, then I'll raise my hand or I'll move my hand. There are things which I do consciously. And then there are some things which happen unconsciously, subconsciously in the body. For example, while I am speaking, I don't forget to breathe. It's not that I have to remember to breathe. It's just that it happens subconsciously. So now there are various kinds of diseases in the body where sometimes in some people, because of some brain damage or some nervous tissue damage, the nervous system damage, the people... There, whatever is happening involuntarily in the body, that they can't make it happen. That means whatever happens involuntarily in the body, it doesn't happen involuntarily. They have to do it consciously. For example, there is a disease when people they will stop breathing if they are not conscious about it. They have to consciously remind, I have to breathe. And these people, whenever they fall asleep, they will die of breathlessness if they fall asleep. Because their body in a sense, because of some damage to the nervous system, the involuntary nervous system, the body forgets to breathe. It's a nightmarish kind of disease, where the person just can't sleep. And there are, in some cases, people, they have to, every time they sleep, they have to put an artificial respiration system, and only then they can breathe. And sometimes the artificial respiration system, if it doesn't work, then the body will forget to sleep, and they will, in the sleep only, they will die, and no one will come to know about it only. They will themselves not realize it also. So now, researchers have found out that if we had to be consciously aware so that the various bodily functions could happen, then we would have such a overload on our brain that we would become dysfunctional, we would not be able to do anything. For example, when we eat food, we may have to remind ourselves, okay, I have to chew it. Like that also happens most of the time subconsciously only. And generally, if we forget it, we will just gulp the food down very fast. We will not be very conscious of its taste. But either way, the food goes down the body. After that, what happens? After that, nobody knows what happens actually. We don't know at least. Some researchers may know. But now if we had to remember, oh, now the food is going down the alimentary canal. Now the alimentary canal has to compress, then it has to expand, And then when the appropriate reactions have to happen in the stomach. If we had to be conscious of all these things, we would not be able to be conscious of anything else in life. Now, if we had to be conscious about breathing, about digestion, about blood circulation, oh, heart, now you must beat. Now, compress, now expand, now compress, now expand. And that's how the blood will go all over the body. Now, if we had to be conscious of all these things, we would have a tremendous overload on our brain. So, it's a great relief that we don't have to be conscious of all these things. But how do these things happen? Scientists say that they're just automatically happening. Actually, we discussed earlier how automatically simply means that we don't know who is in control and how that control is happening. But that it doesn't mean automatically doesn't mean absence of control. Automatically simply means absence of awareness of control. Absence of awareness of control. So who is controlling? Actually, the super soul is controlling. Maya adhyakshena prakriti. Maya adhyakshena prakriti. So actually, even through Maya, that is refers to 9.10 in the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, I am the controller. So in this way, if we think deeply, there is so much in our own body that is happening that is not, although it is necessary for it to be done so that the body can function, but it happens without our conscious awareness. So we are not even aware of it. In fact, we eat food and we enjoy the taste if it is good, and we curse the taste if it is bad. But afterwards, who does the digestion? Actually, the only time we think about our digestion is when it doesn't work. Oh, my stomach is upset today. Why is the stomach upset? So practically the only time we think about digestion is when it doesn't work. But at other times, when the digestion does work, at that time, what happens? We don't even think about it. So who is doing all this? It is not actually we who are doing it. So with respect to these things, we can say that I am not the doer. So actually, science tells us how much is happening in the body for which we are not the doers. So, naiva kinchit karomiti. I am not doing any of these things, we can say this. So, to some extent, science makes us aware of our own ignorance with respect to the complexity of the mechanisms by which the body works and repairs itself. When a wound happens, we might just decide, okay, I'll put some turmeric, I'll put some band-aid, I'll put some antiseptic. That's all that we do. But what does our medication do? The medication basically would be useless if there would not be an inbuilt healing process. The WBCs are there in the body, the clotting takes place in the body. So if these mechanisms were not there, then the body would not be able to function. And our medication primarily assists the body in healing itself. The doctor who has said that, now most of medicine is essentially entertaining the patient while the body heals itself. So most of medicine is what? Entertaining the patient. Don't let the patient get too worried. Oh, this will go wrong, that will go wrong. Just, they will be alright. Keep taking these medicines. So actually the medicines are not the primary cure. The body's own healing system is the primary cure. The medicines do help, no doubt. And we should take the medicines responsibly, because the body's healing system may need some assistance at times. But the medicines would not be of much help if the body's healing system itself were not working. And that is what happens sometimes in diseases like AIDS. When people get AIDS, at that time, the immune system that is there, the immunodeficiency system of the body, that stops working. And then, what happens is, any small infection can turn out to become lethal and then fatal. So we so actually the body's defense mechanism itself collapses. Then medicines can go only so far in helping the person. They can't help beyond a particular point because the body's defense mechanism itself has collapsed. So that way we can see there's so much in the body for which we are not the doers. Naiva kinchit karomi iti. Beyond what happens at a unconscious level, at what happens at an involuntary level, even what happens at a voluntary level, we are not always in control. For example, I'm moving my hand right now. So now, if suppose I get an ache or I get a paralysis, then I can't move my hand. I'm here, my hand is here, but I can't move it. Or sometimes people get some disease like Parkinson's. And when they get the disease, then what happens is, one loses control over one's motor nervous system. That time also we can understand, oh, I'm not the doer. I thought I was moving my hand around, but I have lost that power. So now we may say, oh, those are unnatural conditions. Naturally, we are the doers, but in certain unnatural conditions, we stop being the doers. However, our living in the body itself is temporary. So when our staying in the body is temporary, our association with the body is temporary, within that temporary association with the body, for some time we are able to do some things, and for some time we are not able to do some things. So what essentially is the difference? How do you say that one is natural, one is unnatural? Now both things happen. And yes, for majority of people that things may not happen, but that doesn't mean that they are the doer. That simply means that the system is in place by which the illusion that they are the doers can continue. And when the system changes its way of functioning, then they cannot continue the illusion. So that is all at a scientific level. Now looking at a philosophical level, we can understand that the material nature is working. Now, I as a soul don't really have much to do with the body. I'm just currently in a body. Now, a person may be in a soul, maybe a non-human body, and then comes to a human body, and may that after that again go back to non-human body. So the soul in a, say, a dog's body can't do anything except bark if it wants to communicate. It can't speak in any of the human languages. So how do I, if I am in a human body, in the next life I have to go to a dog's body or I go to a horse body where I am going to neigh. So how do I produce that particular sound? I don't know anything about it. It's just that along with that body, sharira bandha, sharira yogam, when we become bound in the body, when we get connected to the body, whatever are the faculties that are associated with the body, the soul starts expressing its desires according to those faculties. So actually, that means the body is a mechanism, and according to that mechanism, people work. So when we understand this, then we understand that actually I am not the doer. I am not the doer. Indriyan indriyartheshu vartanta iti dharayan. Let's try to understand this concept of doership more. So now, if we look at this point of who is the doer. So, we have discussed this briefly earlier, but let's focus on this. Now, if the soul is not the doer, it raises several questions. Whose reaction is the soul getting? And whom are the scriptures meant for? So, if it were an absolute statement, the soul is not the doer at all, then if the soul is not the doer, then the soul should not be the reaper of the reactions also. Yet, we say that the soul will get the reactions, isn't it? We say that the soul gets the reactions. And the scriptures also consider soul to be responsible. Scriptures say, you should do this, you should not do this. So, the point is not to say that the soul is not absolutely, is in absolute sense a non-doer. The point is to convey that the soul is not the karta, means the soul is not the satantra karta, is not the independent doer. Not an independent doer. Soul is a dependent doer. Soul works in coordination with other elements. Let's understand this with example. Soul is not the independent doer. How is not the independent doer? Let's look at it. So, now we discuss this. If the tree is the karta, the tree is cut, axe is the instrumental cause, and woodcutter is the initiating cause. So, both causes are important. For actions in the world, Prakriti, material nature is the instrumental cause and Jiva is the initiating cause. So, if a soul is in a human body, then a soul was in a dog's body, in a human body, and then goes into a horse's body. So now the soul is the initiating cause. Say the soul wants to communicate something. So now that soul is the initiating cause with the desire to communicate. But the instrumental cause is different. So in a dog, the dog's voice box is different, the human being's voice box is different, and a horse's voice box is different. So therefore, the sound that comes out will be different. So the instrumental cause is different. So when somebody wants to cut a tree, now somebody may use an axe, somebody may use a machine axe, and somebody may use a tree. Somebody may use a huge bulldozer sort of thing, which just blows down trees. That may vary. So the instrumental cause can be different, and the way the action will work out will be different accordingly. So we have been given a particular instrument, and it's the instrument that is primarily acting, although our desire is the initiator. But it is the instrument that is the executor. So now, moving forward with this understanding, another example is, now when the criminal is put into jail, who is the doer at that time? The police is the instrumental cause. The judge is the sanctioning cause. And the criminal is the initiating cause. So now all three are involved, isn't it? So, if the criminal had not done a wrongdoing, the criminal would not have gone into jail. So the criminal is the initiating cause. But even after the criminal does something, it is the police who have to arrest. So the police are the instrumental cause who take the criminal to the jail, catch the criminal and put him in jail. And then the sentence in jail is sanctioned by the judge. So in the act of jailing the criminal, all three are involved. The police, the judge and the criminal. So like that, when a soul suffers, material nature is the instrumental cause. So if somebody gets a cough, somebody gets a stomach upset, so it's the body that is suffering. So the material nature is the instrumental cause. Super soul is the sanctioning cause. Super soul is the sanctioning cause. Super soul sanctions. Padrishta anumantacha. And the soul is the initiating cause. So actually it is we who have done certain karma for which we are meant to get certain reactions. So we get the reactions according to time, place, circumstance. And according to what is best for our eventual reformation. So in this way we understand who is the karta. The karta is actually all three. Let's understand this with one more example now. The diagrammatic depiction of this over here. So here what you see in the shade of blue, that whole box, rectangular box, that is the conditioned soul. Now the conditioned soul, when the conditioned soul is in the body, at that time the soul is there, the super soul is there, and then material nature is there. Now how do things work? See, there's a sense object which is perceived. And the soul perceives the sense object, so the input of the sense object comes in. And the input comes in of the sense object. So the input comes in from here, like this. Then after that, the soul desires. And the soul of course desires the sense object. That means desire goes outward. But the chain of execution, how it works, when the desires, the soul desires, the soul intends, and that is perceived by the super soul is present in the heart. And then the super soul sanctions. Now when the super soul sanctions, at that time, material nature then executes it. And then the person engages in sense gratification. But this is how we engage in activities. So now if you look at this carefully, who are all the doers? The soul is the doer in the sense of being the desirer, in the sense of being the initiator. Super soul is the sanctioner and material nature is the executor. So all three are the doers. Now, what is the point of the Gita verse over here? Naiva kinchit karomiti. So what it means is, indriyan indriyartheshu vartanta iti dharayan. At simply the senses are coming in contact with the sense objects. So what does it mean is that there are some inevitable needs of the body which have to be fulfilled. And those are fulfilled. But beyond that, there is no further requirement to try to engage in sense gratification because the soul is not motivated by material desire. And the soul is not motivated by material desire, then there is no further stimulation to do sensual activities. And that's why the person stays protected. So person doesn't get bound. So in this case, what will happen for a detached soul? What will happen for a detached soul? So actually, that means there is no desire for sense gratification. There is indriyan indriyartheshu. So material nature means the senses. So then the body needs some food. So then material nature, basically, the soul is inside the body. The soul is here. And the body is a vehicle. And the body needs some fuel for the vehicle. So then the food comes inside the body. And when the food is going inside the body, the person doesn't think, oh, I'm going to enjoy this food. Indriyan indriyartheshu vartanta iti dharayani. The senses are coming in contact with sense objects. Now we wonder, if a person doesn't desire, how can one eat food? Now one will have to have some desire to eat food. Yes, the desire to eat food can be there, but the desire while eating food can be to eat to live or eat to enjoy. So now when we eat to live, then there is no enjoying mentality over there. When there is eat to enjoy, then the enjoying mentality comes, takes hold, and then that can implicate one in karmic bondage. So, indriyan indriyartheshu vartant iti dharayan. When one is engaged, when in contact with senses and sense objects, then there is no bondage involved over there. Indriyan indriyartheshu vartant iti dharayan. So now, let's understand this more. This is a very important concept to understand in the Bhagavad Gita. And Prabhupada explains how this is a devotee acts for the sense gratification of Krishna. For the pleasure of Krishna. Uses all senses in Krishna's service. Now, that Krishna will introduce, that will point to in the next verse. So, Brahmanyadhaya karmani sangam tyaktva karoti yaha lipyate nasa papena padmapatra mivambhasa. So, when the soul offers the karma to whom? Brahmanya adhaya karmani. Adhaya means to offer, to resign, to hand over. So when one does one's karma, what does one think? Oh, this is for the absolute truth. This is, so the Prabhupada explained this from the devotional perspective. Sangam tyaktva karotiya. So when one gives up attachment and acts, such a person, lipyate na sa papena. Such a person doesn't become bound by karma. Why? Because the person is like Padma Patram Imambhasa. So Ambhasa, Ambhasa is water, Padma Patra is lotus. Padma Patram Imambhasa. So Brahmanya Adhaya Karmani. So when we offer the work to the absolute truth, now the word Brahman, the Acharya will live with their Bhushan. So different Acharyas explain this Brahman in different ways. So it will depend on what is the conception. For a Bhakta, Bhakta will understand Brahman is actually Bhagavan. And Prabhupada is explaining from that perspective. That for the Bhakta, Brahman be Bhagavan, the devotee offers all the work to Krishna. And uses all the sensory activities for Krishna's pleasure. The Karma Yogi may not know at this stage that actually the absolute truth is Bhagavan. So what does the Karma Yogi do? The Karma Yogi will work understanding that it is material nature that is acting. So the word Brahman can also be used to refer to material nature. This will happen in the 14th chapter, 3rd and 4th verses, Krishna talks about where Brahma refers to material nature. He says that Sarvayonishu Kaunteya Murtayam Sambhava. Sarvayonishu Kaunteya Murtayam Sambhava. So there he says, Brahma Mahadyonir Aham Bija Pradhapita. So there he says that Brahma Mahadyonir. So the great womb, that womb is referring to, he uses the word Brahma to explain that, but that womb refers to Sarvayonishu Kaunteya Murtayasa Mavaya. So basically Krishna is telling Sarvayonishu Kaunteya. All living beings, what happens? They get their forms within the womb of material nature. Murtaya. So the Murtaya refers here to the form. So they get the form through material nature. And the great womb, Aham Bija Pradhapita, Krishna says, I give the seed. And who is it that gives the seed? It is actually Krishna who gives the seed. And who is it that uses the seed? The person who uses the seed is that is material nature. So material nature is referred to by the word Brahma over here. So Aham Bija Pradhapita. Brahma Mahadyonir. So the word Brahma can refer to material nature also. And here, if the person doesn't know about the absolute truth, the person may think, okay, it is material nature acting, so I am not acting in this way. So when one thinks in this way, so when one doesn't get oneself emotionally involved in the actions of material nature, one doesn't think that I am the doer, I am the enjoyer, then that person doesn't become bound. And the example for that is given as Padmapatram Ivambhasa. Padmapatra. Padma is lotus. So, now lotus has this characteristic that even if water falls on it, water just slips away. The lotus flower doesn't stay wet for very long. In fact, there is some dirt on it also. The dirt also gets slipped off, washed off, and the water also gets washed off. So, it doesn't stay wet. So, Padmapatra Vivambhasa means the karma doesn't bind to the soul. The karma just washes off because there is no emotional attachment which will bind the soul. So, now actually this property of lotus is so remarkable that it has been utilized even by the commercial industry. There are researchers who have observed how is it that lotus, water doesn't stick to it. And by observing the way a lotus leaf is constructed, then its surface density, its surface tension and its surface construction and all those things, well, by observing them, researchers have replicated that. And then when they make big skyscraper buildings. Now, these skyscraper buildings are meant to be look very good also. But they have to be clean. How will somebody clean them? You can't have people climbing up on ladders every day to clean these skyscraper buildings. So, they are designed with lotus hand facades. They are called as lotus hand facades. Facades means front face. Lotus hand means they are like lotus. So, if this water is sprinkled from above, then that water, they are made in the facade, their walls are made in such a way that nothing sticks too much to them. So when water goes off, water also slips off, and along with that, water cleanses away whatever dust particles are there on it. And this way, they stay clean. So Padmapatram Ivambhasa. So a devotee who is working in the material world can similarly stay detached, can say Padmapatram Ivambhasa if that devotee works in this way. In what way? Brahmanyadaya Karmani. So Prabhupada quotes how Krishna is reiterating what he has said in 3.30. Mai Sarvani Karmani Sanyasa. So Prabhupada translates Brahmanya as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and for that he correlates this with 3.30, saying that Krishna has already said, give your work to me, and to me, and same thing is being said over here. And Prabhupada also quotes that he quotes also this material world is a sum total manifesting of three modes of material nature, technically called Pradhan. And the Vedic hymns, Sarvam ye tad brahma, tasmad ye tad brahma nam rupam annam cha jayate, Mandukya Upanishad, the first is from Mandukya Upanishad, second is from Mundaka Upanishad. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Mam yonir mahat brahma, indicate that everything in the material world is a manifestation of the Brahman. So, that means even the material nature is a manifestation of Brahman. Prabhupada does not develop that point over here, but he does mention that point. So in this way, Krishna is addressing Arjuna's question of how a person while working in the material world can stay free from bondage. So now, what is the motivation for such a person to work? If one is not going to be involved, one should not have emotional desire for the result. One should not be attached to the result. And what is the motivation for working? Krishna says purification, that he addresses in this verse. Kayena manasa buddhya kevalairindriyairapi yogina karma kurvanti sangam tyaktvatma shuddhaye. So kayena manasa, so with the body, with the mind, with the intelligence, and even with the senses, kevalairindriyairapi yogina karma kurvanti. The yogi work. For what purpose? Sangam tyaktva. If I have given up the attachment, then there is no reason for me to work. But I work for Atma Shuddhaye. For the sake of purification. Atma Shuddhaye. So, now, you know, we can practice spiritual life at various levels. We know that we have discussed this fear, desire, duty and love. So, fear is, oh, if I don't obey God, I will be punished. Therefore, let me obey God. Desire is actually, where, as if I obey God, He'll give me some good results. duty is the level where sadhana bhakti is performed. Duty refers to the level where, now duty can mean various things, but for us as transcendentalists who are practicing bhakti yoga, it is at the level of duty where our motivation for practicing spiritual life is, say, I want to follow the instructions of my spiritual master, of Krishna ultimately, so that I will become purified, so that I will become elevated, so that I will ultimately become liberated and return back to Krishna. So, kevalair indriyairapi, indriyairapi. So, why indriyairapi? Now, it is remarkable that the senses can also be involved. The idea is that there can be two meanings of this. One meaning is that even if the mind is not involved, at least let the senses be involved. That means that suppose we are chanting Hare Krishna. Now, somehow we are not able to concentrate while chanting. So, okay, even if you are not able to concentrate, at least do the external ritual. At least chant. At least let the senses gain. Well, kevalair can mean at least the senses. Or kevalair can mean even the senses. So, normally the idea is that in spiritual life, the senses are the cause of bondage. And one should have minimum engagement for the senses. But the process of purification, the active method of yoga. There is active method of yoga and there is a contemplative method of yoga. The contemplative method of yoga is centered around more of the jnani process. One sits and ponders, I am not the body, I am the soul. Naiti, naiti. That is one way of doing things. The other way of doing things is active. Use the senses in Krishna's service. So we use the eyes to behold Krishna's form, we use the tongue to speak about Krishna. And in this way, sangam tyaktvat mishuddhaye, we can work for our purification. So even the senses, which normally cause bondage, can lead to liberation if we engage them properly. So at the final stage, when we are purified, the senses themselves can bring us ecstasy. You know, the senses cause us bondage and agony in material existence. At the pure stage, the senses can bring us ecstasy. So we have Rupa Goswami, for example, saying that there's a famous verse, Tunde Tandavini Ratanatanate Tundavali Labdaye. He says that when I chant the holy names, you know, I get so much nectar chanting of holy names that I feel that I should have hundreds and thousands of mouths and I should have crores of ears. Why? So that I can relish the nectar. The nectar is so much that no jane janita kiyadbe amritai. Krishneti Varanadvai. I do not know how much nectar is there in these holy names. So now this is a statement of ignorance, which is not a statement of ignorance actually. It is a statement of amazement. It is a statement of wonder. So somebody dives into the ocean and goes deep and deep and deep and really realizes how big the ocean is. That person comes out and says, I do not know how big this ocean is. It's amazing. So, I do not know how big the ocean is. When I understand this, at that time, I become purified. Because I know that actually this ocean is so big. So, I say that it is not big enough. So, that is the way the senses, kevalair indriyairapi. I act according to my senses. Because the senses give me ecstasy. So, currently our senses cause agony. We see sense objects and we crave for them. And we want them and no, we are not meant to take them, we enjoy them. And it is so much battle, they cause agony. At the pure stage, they will bring us ecstasy. But in between, to go from agony to ecstasy, through the senses, we have to have tolerance. We have to have patience. We have to have determination. So, steadily we engage in the process of bhakti, the process of purification. So even the senses can be engaged. Normally the senses are to be put aside. We have discussed this principle in 2.58 in the Bhagavad Gita when it is said that just as a tortoise withdraws all its limbs inside. Just as a tortoise withdraws all its limbs inside. Similarly, we can also withdraw all our limbs inside. All our senses inside. So that's one way of acting. But here the point is kevalair indriyairapi. Even the senses can be engaged for purification. In fact, the process of bhakti is in many ways sensory spirituality. This word sensuous refers to that which is generally the word sensory and sensuous. Both are adjectives that come from sense. Senses. Now we have senses, we have eyes, ears. So the word sensuous is generally used to refer to that which is materially titillating. So sensuous, the sensuous forms, sensuous objects. That means those which attract the senses, which agitate the senses. Sensory is used more in the functional sense. So functional means sensory perception, we say. We don't say sensuous perception. Sensory perception means whatever we are perceiving with our senses. So bhakti is sensory spirituality. Sensory spirituality means the senses are very actively involved in the process of spirituality, in the process of purification. And in this way, one makes spiritual advancement and one returns back to Krishna gradually. So here the remarkable point is even the senses can be involved. Even the senses. So kevalair indriyairapi. Kevalair indriyairapi. So in this way, by engaging this way, we'll become purified. So the same tongue which was causing us bondage by speaking nonsense, that same tongue when we speak about Krishna can purify us, it can elevate us, it can liberate us. So now Prabhupada again quotes the verse from Rupa Goswami about Jivan Muktaha. So we discussed about different kinds of muktas. Earlier, we'll mention it. So Bhakti Samrita 1 to 187 says that here also the point is one is using the gira. Iha yasya hare dasya karmana manasa gira. The body, the mind and the senses. When one engages, such a person is jivan muktaha. Such a person is actually liberated. So there are various different kinds of muktas. So who are the different kinds of muktas? So we discuss about Jivan Mukta and Videha Mukta. So Jivan Mukta is the person who has a Deha, who has a body, but is liberated from all material attachments, and so is for all practical purposes liberated. But that person is in the body, but is liberated because the person has no material attachments. What causes bondage is the attachments. Videha Mukta is the person who has left the body and has gone back to the spiritual world. Now, Jiva Goswami also talks about three types of Mahabhagavatas. So he talks about those who are Gunatita and Swarupa Siddha. Then he talks about those who are Gunatita but not Swarup Siddha. Then they are, third is not Gunatita, not Swarup Siddha, but still they are Sthira. Let's see what this means. Those who are Gunatita and Swarup Siddha means that they have transcended the three modes and they have realized the Swarupa in the spiritual world. See, we discussed earlier about the negative axis and the positive axis. So Gunatita means one has gone from the negative axis to zero. And Swarupa Siddha means one has advanced on the positive axis till one has realized one's Swarupa. All of us have a eternal spiritual relationship with Krishna. And that is based on a particular form that we have. We may be a Gopa or a Gopi or whatever. Our Swarupa is in the spiritual world. And we all have that Swarupa. And as we make spiritual advancement, we will realize what is our Swarupa. So there are these souls who have not only moved out from the negative, but they have also moved forward on the positive. They are Gunatita and they are Swarupa Siddha also. So these are souls, they may be in the material world, but they are actually for all practical purposes in the spiritual world. Now we have pastimes of say Raghunath Das Goswami. At such times he says that now he was a very austere person who would practically eat a little buttermilk once in 2-3 days. But at one time he was sick and the Vaidya, the doctor who came there said that he has got stomach upset because of overeating. Now all the disciples and associates of Raghunath Das, they are so angry with the doctor. What kind of nonsense diagnosis are you doing? Now he eats nothing. It is almost like blasphemy of Raghunath Das Goswami. How could you say that he eats? He doesn't eat anything practically. How could he have overeaten? When Raghunath Das Goswami was told about this, he said, yes. Actually, no, there was a festival in the spiritual world. And the spiritual master world, Radharani and Sakis had cooked. And they had cooked kheer. And I ate a lot of kheer. So when I ate a lot of kheer, that's how my stomach has got upset. So actually what has happened in the spiritual world? So that now it's not that in the spiritual world we'll have Raghunath Das Goswami as Raghunath Das Goswami. Now he's not a Goswami over there, he's a Manjari over there. He's a Manjari, he's an intimate associate of Radharani and the Gopis. So that means he's here acting as a Goswami, but he's also aware of his Swarupa and he's acting at the level of Swarupa also. So when the soul becomes Swarupa Siddha, the soul has the capacity to act at both levels. At a Swarupa Siddha level, at this level also. So these are souls who both feet are situated in the spiritual world. Now, the both feet are spiritual. Soul is as good as back in the spiritual world, only waiting just for the body to leave, body to exhaust its tenure in the material world. And once its tenure is exhausted, the soul will return back to the spiritual world. Then there is gunatita, but not swarupa siddha. The second category. That means that the person has, so negative axis, positive axis, the person has gone through the negative axis, beyond the negative axis, but has not yet advanced very far in the spiritual positive axis. That means has not realized the swarupa till now. That person is also actually considered jivan mukta, because the person is no longer influenced by the three modes. And then there can also be third category. These people also consider great souls. They are not gunatita and they are not swarupa siddha. So second category is the soul who is, one leg is in the spiritual world, one leg is in the material world. But for those who are third category, both their legs are in the material world, but their eyes are fixed on the spiritual world. They are not looking here and there to see what is the pleasure available in the material world. Their eyes are fixed on the spiritual world. On the spiritual world and on the spiritual world alone. So they are the topmost souls. Not gunatita. They are not topmost among all the souls who are still in the conditioned stage, and they are moving towards liberated. So they are as good as liberated, because they are not looking, they are not craving for the things of this world. So of course the highest is gunatita and swarupa siddha, but all three are to various degrees jivan mukta. So here Krishna is saying that people, souls who get this conception, they work with the process of purification and they attain liberation. That he will tell in the next verse. So युक्तः कर्मफलं त्यक्त्वा शान्तिमाप्नोति नैष्टिकीम् अयुक्तः कामकारेण फले सक्तो निबध्यते. सो युक्तः च पर्सन इज वेल सिचुएटेड वेल कनेक्टेड टू एब्सोल्यूट ट्रूथ कर्मफलं त्यक्त्वा च पर्सन गिव्स अप अटैचमेंट टू द फ्रूट्स ऑफ वर्क एंड देन शान्तिमाप्नोति च पर्सन अटेन्स पीस. व्हाट काइंड ऑफ पीस? Naishtikim. Naishtikim means unflappable, unshakable. And then ayuktaha kamakarena. The person who is ayukta, the person who is not connected with the absolute truth, the person acts because of kamakarena. The person acts because of lust, of selfish desire. And because that person is motivated by phale sakto, is motivated by the desire for the fruit. So nibadhyate. Nibadhyate means such a person becomes bound. So there is a difference between the two kinds of people. And Krishna is telling that now Krishna in this verse is offering a comparison between the fruitive worker and the karma yogi. In 5.6, there is also a comparison. There the comparison was between the karma yogi and the jnana yogi. And Krishna in 5.6 said that, the 5.6 was that, it said that actually the yoga yukto mune brahma achirena adigachyati sanyasastu mahabaho dukkham aptum ayogataha. So the person who is ayogataha, the person who is not practicing karma yoga, is trying to do inactivity, that person will find it very difficult to become free from bondage. In 5.2 Krishna said, yes, both paths are good, but karma yoga is better. Why? That he has told in 5.6. It is better because ayogataha will lead to dukkham. It will be difficult. Whereas when one practices yoga, then activity is natural. And then that will, one will happily, sukham bandhatra muchyate. Now somebody may say that, oh, but I am going to act. Won't action cause bondage? That's what Krishna has explained. It is not action that causes bondage, it is motivation that causes bondage. And when the person doesn't have a selfish motivation, then the person will not get bound. And Krishna is going to tell over here now, in this verse, that a person who doesn't have selfish motivation, that person will not get bound. So here what he says, yukta karma phalam tyaktva. So, because this person has no selfish motivation, that person doesn't get bound. And when the person doesn't get bound, shanti maapnoti naishtikim. So Krishna knows that Arjuna has a longing for peace. But he is telling you will attain the supreme peace. He has used the word param shantim in 4.39. And now here he is using a similar superlative. He is using an epithet for describing. He is saying, Naishtikim. Naishtikim means unshaken, unshakable, very deep, unflinching. So, you know, people may have put on a facade of peace in this world, but when there are big agitations that come up, then they will also get disturbed. But when a person has no agitation, nothing of the world can disturb him. So, Krishna is telling Arjuna, don't think that you will get peace simply by avoiding war. Actually, even if you avoid the war, as long as one has mental attachments, one will be agitated. But if you act in karma yoga and purify yourself of mental attachments, then what you will attain is shantim naishtikim. You will attain unshakable peace. On the other hand, ayuktaha, your person is not connected. So here the comparison is between karma yogi and fruity worker, the karma kandi. Or it can be the materialist also, vikarmi yoga. Ayuktaha, kama karena, such a person works out of material desire. And if a person works out of material desire, what happens? Phale sakto, because the person is attached to the fruit, then nipadyate, such a person becomes bound. So Krishna is very categorically comparing and explaining that what causes bondage is not action, but motivation. And if one is more kama karena phale sakto, then there is bondage. But one is ayuktaha, and then karma phalam tektva, then there is no bondage. So Prabhupada explains this in the point in the purport. Prabhupada makes a very profound statement over here. This is the secret of Krishna consciousness. Realization that there is no existence besides Krishna is the platform of peace and fearlessness. Realization that there is no existence besides Krishna. What does this mean? It means that ultimately everything is working under Krishna's sanction. Whatever happens, it cannot happen when the Krishna's sanction is there. And whatever exists is Krishna's energy. So, when we see something as separate from Krishna, that is illusion. When we see everything as connected with Krishna, that is a reality. And that reality, see, the realizing that no existence besides Krishna is a platform of peace. Now, peace is talked about already, shanti. But Prabhupada says peace and fearlessness. Why fearlessness? Yunaishtiki. So what takes away our peace is fear. Oh, what if that goes wrong? What if that goes wrong? What if that goes wrong? That causes fear. And these fears take away peace. But one will understand there is nothing beyond Krishna, and Krishna is always my well-wisher. Then there is no loss. Then it's the platform of peace and fearlessness. Peace and fearlessness. So now Krishna will talk about how one can stay detached further. We'll give another example now to illustrate this point. Sarva karmani manasa sanyasyaste sukham vashi navadware pure dehi naiva kurvan nakarayan. So Krishna says, sarva karmani manasa. So how should one work? All the work with the mind. What should do? Sanyasyaste. So Krishna is talking about here manasa sanyas. You know, just as we have manasa puja. Now, manasa puja means if a devotee cannot worship Krishna directly, then the devotee can worship Krishna in the mind. So if you cannot offer beautiful jewel necklaces to Krishna because we don't have the financial resources to do that, then we can do it in the mind. Krishna, beautiful deity, and I want to offer this to you. Please accept this. So that is accepted because Krishna sees our intention. And when Krishna sees that our intention is to serve Him, to glorify Him, then Krishna accepts that intention. So, manasa sanyasyaste. So, manasa sanyasya. So, what we similarly, that is at a devotional level, at a karma yogi level. Okay, I am not the doer. Sarva karmani sanyasa, manasa sanyasyaste. So, when I understand that actually I am not the doer, the body has certain needs and those needs need to be fulfilled. So, whatever needs are required for the body, I fulfill those needs. Sukham vashi, such a person will be able to stay happily. Sukham vashi. Will be able to, how happy? Because there will be no messing up with the troublesome sense objects, especially in terms of emotional entanglements with them. We will function in the material world, but we will be emotionally entangled in them. And navadware pure dehi. So, navadwar. Navadwar refers to 9 doors. So, pure dehi. Pura is a city. Like we have Jagannath Puri. So, the city of Lord Jagannath. So, Puri refers to a place. So, Pura also refers to a place. So, Navadvara Pure Dehi. The city of 9 gates. So, the Dehi is the soul who lives in the city of 9 gates. So, Nakurvan Eva Kurvan Nakarayan. Such a person will not be the doer and will not be the motivator for doing to others. That means Krishna is saying that you will not be the doer, I will not be also doer. Krishna is, Arjuna is thinking, Krishna, why are you asking me to fight in such a ghastly war? You know, ghora karma, why are you asking me to do it? Krishna has asked in the third chapter, Tat kim karmani ghore ma niyojayasi keshava. He is asked in 3.1. So, Krishna is saying, when you understand this philosophically, then you will not think that you are the doer of anything, nor will you think that I am making you do anything. Because you understand the material nature that is acting. Sanyasi aste sukham vashi. So to the extent we think that we are going to enjoy the sense objects, to that extent we think I am doing things. And to the extent we think that I am doing things, to the extent we will get entangled, we will become bound in material existence. But to the extent we don't think this, to that extent we will not become bound. So, now what is this navadvare pure dehi? Now navja the navadvara, they are the nine holes in the body. So, Prabhupada explains, this is quote of Shukra from the Shvetashvatara Upanishad. Navadvare pure dehi, hamso lelayate vahi, vashi sarvasya lokasya, thavarasya charasya cha. So, this verse talks about the navadvare pure dehi. And now, it's the same phrase that is there in this verse, in the C part. So 5.13c is repeated in Shvetashvatara Upanishad 3.18a. Navadvare pure dehi hamso lelayate bahi. So what is described over here? The Lord is situated in this body and vashi sarvasya lokasthavarasya charasya cha. So when the living entity vashi sarvasya lokasya. So actually when the living entity, Prabhupada explains, is situated in the condition stage, and then this identifies with the body, thinks I am this body. So what are the nine gates to the body? The nine gates here are two eyes, two nostrils, two ears, one mouth, and anus and the genitals. So they are the nine holes in the body. And just in the city, you know, we may have different entrance gates. You know, sometimes the city has a northern gate, a southern gate, a eastern gate, a western gate. Those are the ways from which people can come inside the city. Especially if some city is like a fort where there are walls around it. Then those cities are, the gates are the way from which people can come inside. In the past, when cities had to be defended, their forts would be built. So the gates would be the main entry points. So that way, the entry points for coming into the body for the external world's impressions are the senses. Either entry points or the exit points. So why the emphasis on entry and exit points? Because it is through these that we interact with the world. And it is through these that we can compound in the world. You know, when we find good looking sense objects in this world and we become attracted, I want to enjoy. And then, when we may get into the physical enjoyment, so with Gyanendriya, we pursue, so some sensory impressions come inside. And then we engage in Ritupti, and certain sensory impressions go out, and then sensory actions go out, and then we become bound. So, the interaction of the soul with the external world happens through these gates. So, just as, you know, every well-protected gate, a city will not allow anyone and everyone to come inside, nor will it allow anyone, anything and everything to go outside. You know, if say in a country the foreign exchange situation is delicate and the country may not allow too much money to go out of it. So like that, there is a regulation. Similarly, when one understands that this body is like a city and one needs to regulate what is going inside, what is coming out of the body, then we can stay free from bondage. When we understand that this body is like a city. So, actually, whatever necessary functions that are happening for the body, they let them happen. Now, when I'm going around and walking around, I have to look at the path. I can't close my eyes and walk. So, necessary functions have to happen. But, sarva karmani manasa sanyasyaste. And I said, okay, these are necessary functions that happen for the body. Indriyan indriyartheshu. Necessary contact with the senses and sense objects has to happen. But beyond that, I will not become emotionally involved. I won't think that, okay, the contact of sense of the sense object, that's what will lead me to happiness. So, sanyasi aste sukham vashi. It's like if a person is watching TV, then now the TV may go on if the person understands, okay, this TV program is not going to make me happy. Then the TV may go on, but the person will not get emotionally involved in it. So like that, the things have to go on at the material level, but as long if we are not emotionally involved, if we are renounced, then we won't become bound. So So this is what Krishna is saying. Na kurvan, naiva kurvan, na karayan. You will not be the doer and you will not make others do also. Now Krishna is telling Arjuna to fight. So what does it mean Krishna is saying, I am not the doer in making you do things? So Krishna is actually telling Arjuna, see, you have a body, that is Kshatriya's body right now. Kshatriya body is going to act according to a particular nature. And that nature is the nature of fighting. So you can't resist that nature. But don't become so identified with the nature that you become consumed by it. That you identify yourself entirely as a Kshatriya. So see, Arjuna is a soul. But that soul is right now in a Kshatriya body. So that body has to function as a Kshatriya. Like Arjuna tries to reject that and say, I will act as a sannyas. It will not work because the body is a certain way of working. At the same time, if Arjuna entirely identifies with the Kshatriya conception, then what happens? It becomes a bodily conception. And then one can't make much spiritual advancement. So understand that you have a particular body, and when you have a particular body, you have to work in a particular way. But don't become bound with that conception. Naiva kurvan na karyan. So, I am not making you do things because I am simply encouraging you to act according to your nature, but act in such a way that you are not emotionally involved, that you are not, so then you won't get entangled karmically. And that way you will stay free from bondage and you will keep moving forward in your spiritual journey. So, naiva kurvan na karayan. So, Krishna is, in this way, he is telling here that act Arjuna, but act without the principle of bondage. Act without the principle of entanglement. So now Krishna continues this thread of thought in the next verse. Na kartrutvam na karmani lokasya srujati prabhu na karma phala sanyogam svabhavastu pravartate. So now we may say, is God not the doer? Na kartrutvam na karmani lokasya srujati prabhu. No, he says, no. Prabhu, he refers to the Supreme Lord. No, actually, the Prabhu is not the... So, actually, it can refer to the Master of the City of the Worlds. So, it can... Now, Krishna will talk about this word Prabhu can refer to the Supreme Lord. It can refer to the soul also. Now, in this case, Prabhupada is using the word to refer to the Master of the City of the Nine Gates. In that sense, is the soul is the Prabhu. The soul is not the doer. So, na kartrutvam na karmani lokasya sujati Prabhu. So, actually, the soul neither does things nor makes other do things. Why? Because na karma phala sanyogam. Swabhavastu pravartate. All this happens by swabhava. Swabhava refers to one's material nature. So, it is not that we do things, it does not make others do things, and it doesn't become attached to things. Who is this? This is a liberated soul or enlightened soul. The soul is not doing all these things. So, the soul is never the doer, but as long as soul thinks I am the doer, the soul becomes the bearer, the reaper of the consequences also. But if the soul understands I am not the doer, then the soul will not be the reaper of the consequences. So swabhavastu pravartate. Swabhavastu pravartate means material nature is acting. So the Bhagavad Gita is offering a very profound vision over here. Sometimes we think, Bhagavad Gita, just chant Hare Krishna and be happy. Yes, that is true. Definitely that is true. We can chant Hare Krishna, make spiritual advancement, become happy. But that doesn't mean that there is no metaphysical depth over here in the Bhagavad Gita. That is the conclusion. The conclusion is profoundly simple. But at the same time, it can be very deep also. So the Krishna is sitting over here. The body is a machine. And it will act in a particular way. Swabhavas tu pravartate. So when the soul identifies with that, the soul becomes bound. But if the soul doesn't identify with that, but the soul utilizes that, then the soul doesn't become bound. So Krishna is telling Arjuna, understand that you are not the doer in the sense that the body has certain propensities, the body will act according to those propensities, and you stay detached. When you stay detached, then you will stay free from bondage. So Prabhupada writes in the purport, what is the nature of the soul? He is simply in the midst of the material ocean, struggling for existence. The waves of the ocean are tossing him and he has no control over them. So his best solution is to get out of the water by transcendental Krishna consciousness. So we are all in the ocean. And what are the waves that the ocean refers to? Of course, material existence. What are the waves? The waves are the waves of three worlds. Sometimes suddenly we feel passionate. Sometimes suddenly we feel, I just don't want to do anything. Now, passionate is enough. Karke dikhana hai. I want to show the world who I am. I'm such a famous person. Such a powerful person. Such a talented person. I want to show the world. Sometimes we feel like that. Other than no. We feel going to exist. Jo ho raha hai, hone do. And things happen. Who bothers? What makes any difference? is let me sleep, let me just relax, let me just relax, not do anything. That relaxation is actually, that can be very well tamasic. Just let things happen. On the other hand, that can be transcendental. Transcendental means one understands that actually I am, or we can be in mode of goodness, where mode of contemplative, understanding the deeper truths of life. So the moods like that, we'll see our moods just come and go, and they toss us up and down. To the extent we can strengthen and steady our Krishna connection, to the extent we get a boat by which we can come out of this material ocean. Otherwise, we are helpless. So Krishna is saying, svabhavastu pravartate. So the Varnashram Dharma recognizes that we are all subject to certain moods, but offers a pathway by which we can serve Krishna, steady our connection with Krishna, and ultimately come out of this material ocean. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.